If there's content that's borderline, that's content that we basically will not.
There is no second best. There is no second best crypto asset.
I respect you, and I have a great deal of appreciation to you, JF.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to JFG Tonight. TS Apostolos says you're back on YouTube, finally. Well, I've been here for, 6 months? Yes, I guess I'm back on YouTube, and we are multi-streaming on Twitter, too, because Elon is excited about live streaming on Twitter. Okay, I'll give it a shot. I'll see if my Twitter revenue increases. Something tells me it's never going to be as good as YouTube. Typically, these other platforms, they fail at monetizing as well as YouTube does, even if I hate YouTube to an extent. We'll be talking about science today, and I will be doing a review of my predictions of the revolutionary phenotype, a book I published in 2018, and I've just been proven extremely right, by developments that have happened between 2020 and 2026. I wasn't aware that this research was going on. But finally, someone who was it? I will give him credit because I believe it was, I'm trying to find it. Was it DK Shadow? Or was it, no, it was someone else. Anyways, I can't find it, but someone on the Discord, one member of our audience, DK Shadow, probably, DK Shadow. DK Shadow warned me that there was a recent discovery in science last month, and I didn't know about it. I didn't know that they were actually researching this, which confirmed my big prediction that there once was a reading of a protein into an RNA molecule. And in fact, it turns out that as far as the RNA molecule is concerned, it was proven in 2020. So 2 years after the publication of my book, someone proved it. I just didn't know about the article. And now I know the full chain of research that leads to this month. And this month they have proven even that the transfer goes straight to DNA sometimes with some subset of molecules. So the reason I was successful at predicting this is that the revolutionary phenotype is true. I had the right theory of life, and this is confirmed by these findings. And in fact, it's more than confirmed because I think that TRP stands on its own. It's a first principle consideration of what happens when replicators are taken over by things that they produce, and the things that they produce become replicators themselves. What happens when your genes stop being your genes and a piece of your body takes over? This is true mathematically, and it didn't need any proof. But the proofs are even stronger than just proving the theory true. They prove that the theory gives insight. They prove that as long as academia is stubbornly refusing to talk about the revolutionary phenotype, they will get things wrong. And we are stuck in a non-advancing biology right now, a whole field. Not very interesting what's happening out there. The lines of research are the wrong ones. The predictions, the theories are the wrong ones. People are obsessed about self-replicating RNA, which may happen in the lab. But this theory tells you what to look for. And it's not self-replicating DNA, RNA that led to the emergence of life. RNA was a stage, and proteins were a stage. And self-replicating protein, or proteins that use RNA to replicate themselves, is what you need to look for. And as long as we're not focused on this, there's 90% of the research out there that's just getting it wrong, even by current first principle standards. So academia has to, and someone was telling me, Jeff, it's very hard to convince my professor of reading your book because Newsweek article about you. And it's like, yeah, I want it to be hard. I want it to be hard. That's my whole life goal. I made it hard. Why? Because I want you to see that the entire system is hypocritical. That they won't even take the truth served to them on a silver platter. They will ignore me for 10, 20, 50, 100 years until they're forced to say, yeah, he was right. But you can go faster than this, and we'll go faster than this tonight by bypassing these fucking hypocrites that are playing out as informed people in the academia right now, or in the podcasting, the scientific podcasting industry, telling you that they care about actual arguments and knowledge and truth, but not caring about it at all, and rejecting based on social standards. My life, my life's work, is a test for you to be able to see that these people are not trustable. The people who tell you, I won't read JF's book because maybe he killed his wife, are not serious scientists. You can discard them readily. And if they don't want to read it, then they shouldn't read it. But you should know that they are frauds. John Drake says, I can't get anyone to read the book. It's okay. Try and then see and then judge them. Try, see, and judge them. That is the function of this book. I want to show people that the cancellation of Galileo, as it is said in the myth, you know, oh, this guy was right, but they crucified him. Yeah, this happens again and again. And I want to undermine the delusion that in 2026 it couldn't happen again. It's happening to me, so I know. I know it's happening. I know because I've been in academia for so long. I've seen all of these posers. They're fakes. They all gather like a church on a weekly basis, trying to determine what do the journals want us to think. What has been presented to us by the editors of the journal right now? They don't think about, is that true? They don't think about, well, is that true? Is that false? Is that poorly made? They think about, oh, well, have you seen the latest paper in Science? And there is such philosophical wrongness going on across the field. I know it's hard. I know you guys must be frustrated. I have this book and I can't get my biology professor to read it. And it's a short book. Anyone should be able to read it. It's a short, straight-to-the-point argument. But no, you won't be able. And my point is, they're wrong. And they will be proven wrong, and they will be decredibilized across the next decades. Because you're going to hear just shit from them, and you're going to know, well, this book right here already had it. And we start to see now predictions that I've made that are just coming out exactly as I predicted. We discovered a new molecular mechanism for synthesizing DNA and RNA that is exactly as I described it in the book. It comes from a protein and it goes up, a violation of what they call the dogma of biology. I said it was going to happen 2 years before it was done, and then 8 years before the same thing was proven for DNA. We'll look at this. We'll go through the regular news before we talk about the depth of the science. Ty Rogerson says, this is why the moral signal must be completed. It will delineate how their socializing overrides most of progress. Yes, I hear you. I might get to the moral signal after I'm done with white people food. Because here's another news that's good for the guy who keeps annoying me saying, Jeff, will you get white people food out on time? Absolutely. Because this weekend, I have produced 40 new pages for White People Food. That's about 20 recipes and a handful of research pages. It's getting intense. It's getting very good. And I'm now at 280 pages. I was at 240 pages last month or 2 months ago. I totally gave up White People Food for a month. I needed a break. Sometimes, you know, your mind is just... It waits on your mind to write a book. And you need a break. So I needed a break. That's why I've been programming Planetary Insemination, the game. But now I gave up Planetary Insemination. I'm satisfied about the stage I've reached. I'm going to leave it on the side and I'm going to finish White People Food. We are at 280 pages. I'm aiming for 300 to 350. Then there's going to be a review period and then publication. So absolutely, we are on schedule. This will happen. And the book is getting insane. The fries part, oh my God, you're going to be able to produce five different elite type of fries exactly in the best bistro way you can. It's going to be amazing. I've just done the research on cheeses and I've been tracking dumplings. Bro, the branching of all of the dumplings that exist in European civilization. You wouldn't believe how many of them. I have needed AI to process the data. Unbelievable. Ravioli, pelmeni, empanadas. Where does that come from? Who started wrapping meat in dough? And how does this lead to the meat pies? How does this lead to the pasties? How does this lead to the Eastern European boiled parcels? I've been tracking all of this, and it's amazing the amount of science that goes into it and the amount of analysis, data processing. A lot of the things I've been learning from programming the game has actually helped me use AI to do good data analysis for White People Food. So sometimes, you know, in creation, you may feel that I'm kind of out there and I'm losing my tracks, and I always think in parallel and I always give up projects to push others. But in my experience, when I give up something to push something else, I learn essential stuff that allows me to get back in strength. Because in programming my game, I've been facing a lot of issues with how do I discuss with AI how to program this properly. But everything I've learned, I'm now applying to White People Food. And it helped me, like, I told AI, I need a database of all cheeses. And we got through it. And at first he found 1,300 cheeses. And I was like, well, what about this country? It seems that you're missing something there. We've now mapped 2,300 cheeses and all of the techniques that are used in the creation of cheeses. And I've been drawing maps. And I'm like, this is smoked cheeses. Those are the countries where you can have them. Those are the countries where they're produced. And the Toms, here's the countries. The blue cheese, here's where it comes from. Here's where it travels. Here's how historically the dumplings have been circulating from Italy to France, then from Italy to America, and then Eastern dumplings are of a different kind and they've been penetrating up to Central Europe, and that's where it starts. All of this was extremely helped by AI, because AI can just program the database analysis, poof. And all I have to come up is with the ID, and I'm like, okay, this is what we're going to look into. And AI just... And in one day, for example, the cheese research, in one day, I was able to generate all of the maps for all of the cheese techniques on 2,400 cheeses. GM for the People says, Grok, cluster cheeses by bacterium. Exactly. That's exactly what I've been doing. John Drake says, who figured out that putting pasta into different shapes could change the texture and taste? I wonder. Oh, well, this probably dates back to untraceable moments. Photoman is listening to us on X, and he says, JF, I do believe that Trump will commit to further escalation with the Iran war or allow the heated conflict fall flat. Academia is full of oversized midwittery, even by their specialized genius standards. Absolutely. Absolutely. A huge problem in academia. Academia rejects its geniuses. And academia welcomes the midwits. The midwits who can show I'm submissive to whatever is demanded of me. I'm going to be a good bureaucrat. I'm going to stay in my lane. It's like, well, why do we have an academia if it's just going to be a cloud of social pursuit? Because once you submit to anything, once you submit to a lane, you have been contained. And an academic right now is so contained, you have no idea. Contained by what they can apply for, contained by who will get the grants from the bureaucrats that determine who gets the grants. It's a social system. And that's what I wanted to illustrate with the revolutionary phenotype. It's that you could tell the truth, you could yell it on the roof, and it would be ignored for decades. We're still in it, boys. We're still in that process. It's going to keep up going until I die. And in fact, it's going to keep going after I die. Terra Firma says Marco Pierre White and Gordon Ramsay embody the spirit of white people's food. Well, that's an aspect that basically is the goal of white people food. It's like you have all of these people who are pillars effectively of European culture. But they will never say it. That's my only issue. I love Gordon Ramsay. I love Marco Pierre White. I love Martin Picard. I love them. They're doing all of the right things. And you could argue that they are pushing for a form of cultural identity for European food. But they will always say English. They will always say French. The Italians will always say Italian cuisine. And it's like, well, you know, it's time. First, a lot of these countries are falling demographically. There will be reconcentration. And eventually, we will realize that French versus Italian, French versus English is really just a fun game we can play. But in the end, we're all part of the same group. We are Europeans. And we are so much closer than everyone else on Earth that the distinction at this point has become a handicap. It's a handicap that hides a reality. The reality is there are different lines of cuisine in the world. There are two that have been elevated to forms of art, I would argue, the Asian cuisine and the European cuisine. That's it. And everything shines from these poles. And it's time we say it. That's pretty much the step that the book is trying to take. It's not going to be so explicit. I think that most of the work of this book is done by the title. And then it's just a bunch of recipes and research about food that is extremely high level that you will enjoy, I'm sure, that will change your eating life. But the work will be done by the title. Lapidus says, JF, what time do you think academia was compromised? Obama's term or even earlier, like Clinton's? Bro, I think it was compromised in 1945. Okay. Not a Moose says, you better make sure you double, triple, and quadruple check your AI work to make sure it's not erroneous to invented before you publish anything extracted from it. Oh, absolutely. That's why the AI is really only doing the job for me. I'm always checking what he does, and I'm always verifying what he's giving me. But still, just having the verification to do instead of the data acquisition is like it's a saving of 99% of the time you would have spent on it. Snezana says Serbian style sevapi, make sure in the book mix three types of meat. Okay. Okay, thank you for sevapi has been the AI actually told me reviewing white people food that I was missing sevapi. So I will definitely insert it there. Definitely I have less culture when it comes to Central and Eastern Europe. But I do want the book to have these recipes still. David last name says, JF, is French chauvinism overblown? No, French chauvinism is a real thing. But it's so poorly made. It's like the French are totally erroneous in it. Because French chauvinism is supposed to be a form of demographic defense. You're supposed to not just be proud of your cheese and wine. You would be supposed to be attached to them in a way that leads you to want to protect your nation. But French chauvinism, unfortunately, is boomer chauvinism of a sort that's very hedonistic oriented, but that's not properly converted to, therefore, let's not do mass immigration. You know, that's just the little missing piece. You know, oh yeah, nice cheese, nice wine. Oh yeah, you know, I have this superb technique to make fries. Bravo. Therefore, let's not flood the entire nation with people who won't be able to give a shit about it. Is that too much to ask? I mean, if you're that proud about it, you realize that at some point, your grapes on your farm will not be farmed. You will be dead. Your children will be dead. And whoever has made it there will determine whether there are still grapes being farmed there. And no matter how much you want to develop the technique and the know-how, it won't matter at all if you don't develop the children who can carry it. And this is where French chauvinism totally fails. It's a display. It's, again, I'm against hypocrisy. I'm hurt by the levels of hypocrisy of this world. But you won't be able to preserve French culture if you don't preserve French people. AI is making huge advances. Here they have produced a version of The Shining, a parody of The Shining. Oops, I have to adjust my screen. This is a parody of The Shining, but with fat people in it. 2 or 3 years ago, AI was not able to have Will Smith eating spaghetti. Now AI is capable to finally adjust a movie so that everyone is just more fat. And it's beautiful. It's very well done. Now I realize they've put a music, so with fair use, I can only play a few seconds of that. Don't put music on your videos, guys. That keeps people from playing them. Someone has made a history of France, talking about French chauvinism. A history of France in doom mode. This is the Doom game.
Dovete resistere, barbari. Spettate ordine.
The crowning of Charlemagne. So you can see the whole history of France, but in a Doom interface. I love it. I'm very happy that Elon Musk has retweeted this video, this interview by Rachel Wilson. I'm always happy when I see Rachel and, of course, her husband successful on the public space with their talking point. Excellent interview by Rachel Wilson.
Rachel, the average American woman is the most educated, most financially independent, and most free woman in human history. She's also the loneliest, most depressed, and least likely to have kids. Why do you think women are so unhappy in 2026?
That's the million-dollar question. There's actually been two large-scale studies done trying to answer that question. I think the first came out in 2009. It was called The Paradox of Declining Female Happiness. And in this study, the authors in their summary said that women have reported, you know, this is based on women's surveys when you're asking women their opinion on how they are doing in life, how they feel about things. They're reporting higher levels of unhappiness, like you said, loneliness, depression, than ever before. So if we go back to the 70s, which is arguably...
Excellent interview. I highly recommend it. I'm so happy that Elon is retweeting Rachel. She is pushing a very important message. Down the line, woman will be repaired, but it's gonna take a life. So for it's so painful for me because I would like to live longer to see the point at which women are fixed. But that's like 100 years down the line. So I'm gonna have lived my entire life with broken psychiatric level woman. And it's really too bad. Now, one thing that reconciles me with the world is knowing that there was a generation of women that were kind of fine before me, and that there will be a generation of women kind of fine after me. That's the only thing that... But I would have... Why? Why? Why do I have to be born in the 80s where I've gotten the worst of women? All the time, these fucking psychos. Why? Why did I have to experience a life of brokenness, of sick people, of delusional woman? That sucks. But it's okay. I like the idea of carrying a cross. I like the idea of the message in the Bible of Jesus carrying a cross, accepting that the world is horrible. Farzin says, the Wilsons are extreme hypocrites and horrible representatives of the anti-left. Well, I don't know what you're talking about. Hypocrites? I don't think so. You can have all sorts of judgment about them. I don't. What is wrong about them? They are living a life, husband and wife, and they are reinforcing each other. See, that's kind of a model of what can work as a couple. Because Rachel Wilson, very intelligent woman, but on her own, she probably wouldn't have risen to the fame that she has risen. She would probably be 10 times or maybe 100 times less known if it wasn't of Andrew. But see, the combination of them together works better. That's a good example to give to the world to say, this is nonlinear reinforcement. It's a non-zero-sum game. Whereas the average woman out there sees everything as a zero-sum game and wants to win it all for herself. And in the process, she destroys the whole of civilization. My view on them is that they are a model couple for society. That's how society should work. I'm not going to complain about them at all, because I think if society just got a little closer to them, there would be a lot of mass of problems fixed. Elon's legal team just put OpenAI's second in command on the stand. So the trial keeps going for Elon's OpenAI claim that OpenAI has been fraudulently transforming into a private corporation, basically stealing all of the knowledge that was owned by the nonprofit and profiting from
My brother and I are on that Gatorade Zero train thanks to you. I am slowly making it out of my overweight character arc. Thank you, JF.
Yes. Yes, thank you so much for the generous donation. $73. Wow, thank you. He says, my brother and I are on Gatorade Zero train. Thanks to you, I am slowly making it out of my overweight character arc. Here's my next challenge to you, because you're on the right track. Gatorade Zero is equilibrating your ions. That is very good to have. And for people, you know, some people don't need Gatorade Zero. They just are instinctively doing the right things, not eating too much and drinking water. But for someone like me who's been eating all of his life, always at McDo, always more calories. What the Gatorade Zero allows is you can drink a lot and you can satisfy your stomach a lot with electrolyte calibrated sports drink without the calories. So that's a very good place to be, Nate Dogg. Now, my next challenge to you, Nate Dogg, since you say you're a little fat or overweight, you have to learn to go on for literally 24 hours, sometimes even 48 hours, fasting. So you have to, this is how you're going to lose weight. You have to be able to say, I will just endure the pain. I will endure the pain. You have to work on your mind to develop a self-denying, no, I'm not eating. I don't care. I'm Terminator. I'm at war with the robots. I'm here to save John Connor. I need not to eat. And you need to connect it to something that's dear to you. Maybe you want to be thinner for getting a woman. Maybe you want to be thinner for making babies. You're like, I need to make babies. I need a girlfriend. I'm not going to eat. Now your hunger will come and it's going to say, oh, maybe you could eat a little bit. But you deny yourself. You say, no, I'm not eating. Fasting is very good for you. And it's going to give you just steps of success. It's going to give you, oh, I lost 2 pounds in that fasting. Great, let's keep it up. That's how you do. Sadie Edwards says, I've been telling JF not to drink cola poison for years. Well, you know what? I've now converted for, I've now been reducing a lot of the cola I drink. But for what's left, I still drink a can or two a day of zero sugar, zero caffeine cola. Now, this you can't complain against, okay? This, I will refuse any criticism of this. Because this contains nothing. This is literally water that's been cosmetically made to look like cola. Zero caffeine, zero sugar. Because I realized, wow, caffeine is starting to hit me hard. As I'm getting old, you know, I used to be, I could just drink 10 of those, 20 of those a day, and it was just my regular needs. But I've realized, whoa, caffeine is hitting me, and my sleep, even with the sleeping pills, is starting to get disrupted. And I'll tell you what, it makes a big difference. Giving up caffeine is a good thing for you. If you can give up caffeine, do it. It's more healthy, and it's okay at 20 years old, 30 years old, you're not going to feel the bad of caffeine. But at 40 years old, I'm starting to feel caffeine hits, and I'm like, oh, okay. I have to withdraw from the world. As I get old, everything is less tasty, everything is less interesting. I have to focus on work, on leaving a legacy, on raising my children. But the alcohol, the caffeine, it's all becoming less interesting and more physically hurtful if I take it. Miguel says, it has nothing. Read the ingredients, bro. Well, it's all good stuff. Caramel color. That sounds great. Phosphoric acid. Everyone needs phosphorus. Potassium benzoate. Everyone needs potassium. Potassium citrate. Just potassium with a little spice, with a little lime kick. This all sounds very good. I am rejecting any critique of drinking Coca-Cola Zero and Coca-Cola Zero without caffeine. This cannot hurt me, I am sure. Now there's aspartame. Some people have a bad opinion of aspartame. I don't. If aspartame was killing you, it would have killed me already. And meanwhile, while the Sam Altman troubles with OpenAI, with transferring OpenAI into a private corporation go, and while his conflict with Elon Musk is in trial right now, the sister of Sam Altman keeps it up. You know, this was the sister who claims that Sam Altman raped her when she was young. That it led her to be mentally, you know, impacted, trauma. It led to trauma, mental trauma. And it led her down the line of sex work, and she had to prostitute herself. Well, I think not necessarily prostitution, or like physical one, but maybe on the web, I don't know. But some degree of sex work that she says, and she had to do sex work because the inheritance of her parents has been somehow stolen by the rest of her family. So she feels like she's been turned from the family, and they've rejected her, and she is bringing further trouble into the trial by just trying to publicize her claims. Terra Firma says, do you think the European biomass is some greater genetically connected life form that is conscious, and were we given human avatars by this entity at the end of the civilization of Europe's last battle? No. The answer to your question is no. No, Europeans are just a people formed by individuals. Now, it does lead to a connectedness between the individuals, but that connectedness is not to be interpreted as a mind. In fact, that's the whole goal of my book and my future book, The Moral Signal. I reject the idea that culture is out there, that culture exists as a separate entity, that it's something in the air being carried, that there's a meme. No, to the contrary. What I say is it's all in your brain, it's all a biological function, and it's an individual biological function in terms of sender-receiver outputs. That is the right way to understand culture biologically. Sender-receiver outputs. Not, oh, it exists there and we contribute to culture and we sculpt culture. No. We do things, we do them from our own brain to impress others. It leads to an illusion of connectedness, but it's all individual input-output structures. Miguel says, well, at least you're conscious of what you're drinking. You're an adult male who knows what he's doing. Guess the drink is not that bad. Yeah, exactly. That's my point. I mean, these substances are just basic substances that need to be in the cola anyway, by the way. Because if it was just pure water, you would drink yourself away. You would lose all of your ions. So these potassium is in there because you have to have some potassium in what you drink if you're going to drink a lot of it. Polly Marquette says, McDonald's to eliminate self-serve soda stations nationwide by 2032. 2032 is when it happens, boys. Citing changing consumer habits. What could have changed? I mean, in 2010, why can't we have fountain drinks anymore? Yeah, it's because people are stealing this fountain drink. It's because we have a population of careless people who do not respect corporations, who do not they see everything as I can take more of it, I'm going to take more of it. So eventually, everyone gets deprived of the opportunity for self-serve because the standard has become fraud. The standard has become theft. I mean, in California, they're explicitly legalizing theft. And anyways, it's like, let's be clear, the self-serve, it works in a clean society with everyone interested in cleanliness. That works. I've seen self-serve in hipster areas, white liberal areas. They're clean and you can self-serve. But in the general low-level areas of America, you don't want to self-serve. Because it's amazing how crappy and disgusting it becomes the self-serve just within a few minutes after they cleaned it. It's like, if you have a whole population that doesn't care about how clean things... It's a responsibility. There's a moral duty that comes with self-serve. It's the moral duty of caring for the next person who's going to need it. It's the moral duty of not wanting to leave a single drop in any actions you've made. Now, this level of care it's hard to achieve in current society. Plapides says, those fountain drinks are extremely cheap. The fact that they are closing it down means that it happens way more than we think. Enough for them to take a big enough dollar hit. Yeah, I've been wondering about how much they actually cost, because it's those big cassettes. Now, whenever I see the McDo employee change the Diet Coke cassette, and he's like, and this is concentrated Diet Coke. It probably can serve thousands, because they mix it with incoming sink water, basically, just regular water. So you have a mix of water and a little bit of the injection of the syrup. Now, whenever I see them change this syrup cassette for one of the lines, this reminds me a lot about printers. And I'm traumatized. I'm like, what? Are we drinking Diet Coke from a monthly paid for subscription cassette? McDonald's must be paying millions of dollars for these cassettes, because when I use a printer and you go buy at Staples the regular ink cartridge, it's like $40, $100 for the cartridge, and it will allow you to print 20 to 40 pages. So I'm always traumatized by this, because I eventually liberated myself. I bought a printer that has optional that you can mess with the cartridges, and you can inject laser powder, but straight from an independent producer. So at this point, I can print as much as I want. I don't care anymore. I'm liberated from the monthly replacement of cassettes, of cartridges. But I can't help but think that McDonald's is in a tough situation. If they have to pay, if the local place has to pay for the syrup every time on a subscription basis. Inseminatory Supremacy says, we had fountain drinks at the family restaurant back in the day. I think the syrup came in 40-liter barrels, and we used to change them about once a year per flavor. Well, see, with McDonald's, that's great. But with McDonald's, it's much more common. They have to change it a lot, because every time I go to McDonald's, maybe 10% of the time, I see them changing one. So it's a regular thing for them to change it. John Drake says, my wife worked for Coke for years. It cost fractions of a penny for a liter of fountain pop. Wow, really? So they've really worked the efficiency. That's great. So that's probably why they didn't care about losing a little bit. But at this point, I'm pretty sure they lose a lot from... I don't think it's just like getting the second refill. I think they were fine about the second refill. I think what they're probably faced with is people just stealing, not even paying, and just stealing straight out the Diet Coke. Nick Frontes is talking positively of Candace Owens. I agree with Nick here.
Django Unchained. Dude, she's like Django. She's like Django, killing everybody in the big house and then blowing it up. Kind of what it was, because she was there. She worked there. She was one of their, probably one of the top shows. And then she just exploded the whole f-ing house on her way out. Kind of epic. Can't lie. I'm going to glaze Candace Owens a little bit. I don't agree with everything that she's up to, but, you know, if she brings down the Daily Wire, then she's a patriot.
I agree with this feeling. Candace is not perfect, but she is on such a noble quest that absolutely we should adore her work. I mean, we have disagreements. She would certainly have disagreements with me. She's very Catholic, there's all sorts of things in which she may disagree with me, but that's all very, very small stuff compared to the noble cause that she is working on. Is this AI or is this true? They say there is this elevated table in Russia for some kind of aristocratic purpose, I guess. They are capable of elevating a table to the guest. So the table shows up and they can even elevate a single plate with the pig feet. Wow, I mean, so the guests, they see the table elevate and poof, there's new food. Wow, that is impressive. I had never heard about this. So let's talk about the science of the revolutionary phenotype right here and what has been discovered. So it's this is the most recent paper that came out in April 2026, so just recently. Protein templated synthesis of DNA by an antiphage reverse transcriptase. Now, that is very important because there's a mixing of words here. Protein templated synthesis. What does this mean? It means that in the regular sense of things, it's DNA to RNA, RNA to proteins. And DNA is your genome, and proteins are the little workers in your body. When we say protein templated synthesis, that means the other sense. It means a protein is being read and it's creating DNA. Now, I have predicted this. I have predicted this in 2018. In fact, I had predicted this since 2016, but I wrote it down in the book published in 2018. There will one day be a molecule discovered, or at least there used to be a molecule that existed. It must have existed at some point that was reading proteins, that was outputting RNA, or in this case, it's outputting DNA. Now, the fact that it's whether it's DNA or RNA does not matter so much because the two molecules are very similar, and a molecule that today does DNA could very well come from a molecule that in another circumstance with a couple of mutational changes could do RNA too. But the demonstration of the possibility, the demonstration that it goes on naturally in bacteria right now, is what the great discovery is. So they discovered that when bacteria are fighting phages, so basically viruses that are trying to infect bacteria, they have two defense modes and two defense molecules that are accomplishing the same thing. What they are doing is they are adding a series of repeatable sequences in their DNA. It's like AC, 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 AC. These repeatable sequences are not encoding genes, but physically it seems that they have some property that are just good for the bacteria. What it's probably doing is it's probably fooling the virus by saying, oh, that's not an interesting part of DNA. Let's not try to infect this. So it's probably just protective in a physical sense. But the fact that they are adding these repeatable sequences and the trick that they use to add these repeatable sequences is reverse reading of a protein. It's protein templating that they call it. Now, this means that this must come from somewhere. And it must come from there is a point at which in the past a molecule existed that transferred from protein to RNA. This is the absolutely certain discovery from this. Now, it doesn't matter whether that point in the past was exactly 4 billion years ago or whether it spread over a development that's more recent. It means that life has the tricks to do reverse reading of proteins. That is, instead of writing the protein, life can read from the protein and re-import back into DNA. Now, we knew that this was the case for DNA to RNA. We've always known, as far as I'm alive, as for the time I've been alive and a biologist, We've always known that there are reverse transcriptase viruses. And reverse transcriptase viruses are reverting the normal sense. Instead of DNA down to RNA, they are taking RNA, reading from it, and outputting in DNA. Backward compatibility, says Coco Shuko. That's a nice way to phrase it. Now, it's the people who haven't thought about the phenotypic revolution, they will often frame it as, oh, well, this is the reverse sense. But what I've been claiming in the revolutionary phenotype and for a decade almost is to say that these things are reverse is actually seeing it in reverse. These things existed before DNA to RNA, RNA to proteins. These things must precede. They are the real sense. We are the reversers. So when we encode into DNA our genomes and we output to RNA and we output to proteins, that is the reverse sense. It's not. The dogma of biology has been inverted. It started in the other sense, and now it's in our sense. And we won so hard against the original bacteria and the original viruses that were doing it in the other direction. We won so hard that it doesn't cross the mind of our modern biologists to say, hey, we're actually the inverted organism. We are the revolutionary phenotype. We are the former phenotype of a life form that has died while creating us. This is what happened. So let's see the evidence. I mean, it's extremely advanced electron microscopy. I am not a detailed, I'm not super expert in electron microscopy, but I can just see the general drawings that they make and their result. So what they are saying here is there's this ECDRT3A. That one is working normally with a RNA intermediary. So it still does what I predicted in the revolutionary phenotype, but it does it with an intermediary. So what it does is it reads a protein, it outputs a cDNA, which is cDNA is just how DNA happens to be in bacteria. Now, it does so with an ncRNA branch that is the intermediary. So here, to read from a protein, this molecule needed a trick. And that trick was to have the intermediary, the historical intermediary, which is an RNA molecule. And in the reading, it quickly reverse translates the protein into RNA. And then the RNA can operate the change of DNA. So that's a stage system that in itself is a confirmation of the revolutionary phenotype's prediction. Now there's a second molecule and it does something even more radical. It reads straight from the protein and it writes the DNA directly without an RNA intermediary. So those are just two modes, two molecules that are accomplishing the same goal, and they're doing it either with an intermediary or with not. The intermediary question is irrelevant to the theory of phenotypic revolutions. Both molecules are proof that the reverse reading happens. And they are describing their analysis. So that's a virus, the T1 phage. They are describing what they're doing to it and how they're detecting these things. And they're detecting the changes of DNA. As a result of the insertion of these phages. And they show that the mechanism by which they add these repeating sequences is a defense mechanism against the phage. So it's a defense mechanism. It makes DNA harder for the virus to spot, attach to, and fuck up in a general way. Sadi Edward says, that diagram clearly shows there is no Pepe Silvia. Is that the conclusion you drew? I don't see any mention of Pepe Silvia. I don't even know what Pepe Silvia is. I don't know what you're talking about, bro. Meanwhile, a team of researchers, I didn't know about this, but or I didn't remember, maybe someone mentioned this article to me and I didn't dig in deep. It seems that this had already proven for reverse reading to RNA. It had been proven in 2020 in a Nature paper. So tailed RNAs in genome protection and epigenetic inheritance, they show that there's a protein templated similar mechanism happening. So what we have in the series of discoveries from this 2020 article to today, and by the way, I should mention that not only is the article I've shown you just published, a parallel article has published a similar finding on BioArchive by Song. Antiviral reverse transcriptase primers synthesizes protein-templated DNA. So we have several lines of confirmations. Three independent laboratories have now shown that there is reverse translation, that there is a reading of a protein that leads to some information making it into RNA or DNA. Now, that reading is not high resolution because it's happening in a life form that doesn't need the full reading of the protein genome. But I made the case in the Revolutionary Phenotype that there was once a day where this was a precise mechanism. Now, we are one step above here with this data. We can now say, well, this mechanism exists. It's not precise right now, but what is right now the evolutionary remnant that we're seeing is actually just a little patch. It's a way for bacteria to fight viruses. But this mechanism must have stemmed from a working molecule. I would bet today that this mechanism has a phylogenetic tie. That is, it comes from, historically and evolutionarily, from a mechanism that was more precise, that was able to copy more than just AC, AC, AC. It was, as I made the case, and it had to be, as I made the case in the book, it had to be capable of producing a tRNA that would then reproduce the protein replicator. So we are there. We are at the point, and I was quite moved yesterday to learn about this from DK Shadow. We are at the point where the theory of phenotypic revolution is confirmed by novel finding. And I have been predicting and putting on the record in 2018, I said that this would be found one day. Here's my sentence in the chapter Supplementary Prediction. Page 133. At some point, a self-replicating RNA life form has been produced out of a phenotypic revolution against the protein RNA tango. Oh no, this is the wrong paragraph. Paragraph before. There once existed a reverse translating enzyme, that is, a phenotypic machine capable of reading from a protein and producing a corresponding RNA sequence. We didn't know this in 2018. No one knew this. In fact, I got ridiculed for this. Do you remember when this MIT professor who was thinking about coming onto the show but eventually chickened out? Do you remember when he spent one hour with me on a Skype call trying to say, no, no, Jeff, I think you're inverting stuff. It's DNA to RNA and RNA to protein. And I was like, yeah, I know. I know this is what you think. I'm telling you that in the past, he was taking me for an idiot. But I'm telling you that in the past, the sense was inverted. This is what I'm saying. This is the whole theory of phenotypic revolution. Genetic layers appear because there are phenotypic revolutions. John Drake says, sweet, but we knew. No, we didn't know. There is no one in 2018 that you will find to have made that prediction. It's only in my book, and if you've heard it after 2018, it was from me. So let's go through the thinking of the revolutionary phenotype for those who are not familiar to it. Just a review of what was the line of logic that led me to draw these conclusions. So the revolutionary phenotype is the question of selfish genes. And precisely, what happens when selfish genes compete in the same organism? Okay, John Drake says, that's what I'm saying, lol. Yeah, well, you said it weird. But it's okay. So selfish gene, the selfish gene theory, the way it's laid out by Richard Dawkins, tells us that natural selection constantly produces better phenotypes for the genes. The genes that are bad for themselves, they end up dying. They don't reproduce. Doesn't matter if they punish you by making you completely dead before you produce any babies, or it doesn't matter if the genes just makes you produce 2% less babies. If it makes you produce 2% less babies, it's going to disappear within 100 years. Because 2% less babies is dramatic. 2% less babies is putting you at a complete disadvantage with respect to another life form that does the babies quicker and more of them. So that's the theory of evolution. So the genes get sorted out. Bad genes, and by bad, we mean strictly bad for reproduction, bad for self-replication. They get kicked out of existence. They disappear, and it doesn't take much time. The genes that just give you a little more chance to reproduce, they get favored, they appear more and more. That's the selfish gene theory. And as far as I'm concerned, it explained everything in biology up to the point I discovered the theory of phenotypic revolutions. Now, the question that emerges is if it's just about self-replication, what about those things inside of us that can do replication? So first, there's the fact that our cells are capable of de-doubling, of doubling themselves. That's how we grow. That's how we grow from a single cell to trillions of cells. So these things appear to make copies. Why are they so different from DNA? And then there's the next step of memes, which is, well, culture does seem to make copies, definitely. If I know that 2 plus 2 equals 4 and I teach that to my children, they will have some representation in their brain that 2 plus 2 equals 4. How is that not a replicative process? And if it's a replicative process, what happens then? Those are the base questions that have launched me on the TRP route. Because it's very serious, like, if DNA seems all-powerful in biology, and it's like, why? Why does it have this power? And when does it get reverted? Why isn't it that human culture can be seen as an equal-standing replicator? Those questions were opened up by Richard Dawkins at the end of The Selfish Gene, but they were never resolved. And in fact, they were resolved in a fake way, very poorly, by Sue Blackmore and Daniel Dennett and others. So they were resolved by saying, oh yeah, memes exist. Oh yeah, mimetics. Yeah, we can see them as replicators. They're equal. They're just as good. And I knew that something was wrong with this. But I never knew that what I would discover about this would answer the question of the genetic layers of DNA-based life and why they appeared. But it just turned out that it did. So the answer is there are various reasons why the things that make copies of themselves don't become competing with DNA. The first reason is in my chapter, The Forgetful Creamplex. So the simple idea that the things in our body, they get forgotten by life. So if I injure myself, I make a child, my child will not have my injury. There's no copying process that happens to injury. And in fact, there's no copying process that happens to all of the cells in your body. So they are very forgetful. They don't pass generation. They don't get transmitted. There's no transmission. Therefore, there's no theory of evolution, no selfish gene that applies to them. That's 99.999% of the reason why replicator selfish gene theory applies only to DNA, as far as we can observe. It's because the rest doesn't make an actual copy, an actual reading. When you come inside a woman, there's a reading of your genes that have happened in your balls hours before, days before, and it's going to be a copy of those genes that make it into the next generation. That's all that is preserved. So as far as most of the things, they are already barred to evolutionary advancement or even competing with DNA because they get forgotten. The second reason is the naked warrior. So the naked warrior is the realization that even if something was to make a few copies of themselves, the way cells in our bodies, they do make copies. The cells in my fingers, if I injure myself, they will duplicate, they will patch the injury, they will stop me from bleeding. There's replication going on here. But the naked warrior says, even if there's replication, these cells are helpless. So in an organism that has already evolved to assume blood, to assume oxygen, to assume hearts, lungs, brains, these cells are helpless because they won't win a fight against bacteria. So that's why a cadaver doesn't lead to new life forms. That's why when you die, the cells in your finger will not become babies of you. They could, in principle. In principle, every cell of your finger has the entirety of the genome. Someone could actually make a baby from them scientifically. I could extract your cell from your finger. I could put this in a zygote, implant it in a woman, and you would have a finger baby. That would be a perfect copy of you, by the way. It would be a twin, literally, of you. We just don't do it. But the reason life doesn't do it naturally is that those cells are not there to reproduce. Those cells have compacted their whole genetic interest in trying to save your balls. And if they fail at this mission, they won't even try a parallel mission. They won't even try to go on and try to recreate you. Now, that's true for humans. It's not exactly true for plants. There are some plants that will allow a naked warrior escape. You can just test this by taking a branch of a tree. You snip it. You plant that branch in the soil. What will you have? You will have a twin tree. You will have recreated a baby tree from the branch of the older tree. So I've kept a separation for these events in the revolutionary phenotype. I say this is kind of special case, and it's let's call this phenotypic separation. So a piece of your body separates, plants itself elsewhere. Now, these phenotypic separations that are allowed by trees are not, they're not meaningful evolutionarily. It's just that you can see it the way this way. The tree has two ways to make babies. It has the flowering way, and it has the phenotypic separation way, but down the line, it's still going to be three genes that are in his baby. So it doesn't change anything as far as the genomic constitution goes. Now, that removes a lot of things, because now you have an explanation for why injuries don't transmit to children. It's all Lamarckism, all to be thrown to the trash. You have an explanation for why even those things that make copies inside of us, they don't go on free, they don't keep reproducing. But we're still left with a problem, which is memes. Because memes do not suffer from forgetfulness. They get remembered by people. They get transmitted from parent to children. And memes do not suffer from the naked warrior problem. They can detach from you. They can leave into the air. They can be spoken. And they can be heard by someone else, and they can record it into their brain. So we are left with these two problems. They explain a lot of why phenotypic revolutions don't exist, don't happen very often. But they don't explain why memes don't cause a phenotypic revolution. So there's a third problem that I come with the theory of phenotypic revolutions. the memes are faced with constant mutation. So that's what I call the trickster printer problem. When DNA transmits itself to a child, you get about, in the process from inheriting the DNA from your father and mother to giving it to your children, there's about 64 mutations, 64 misreads of a 6 billion letter genome. So 64 errors in 6 billion is very, very small. And most importantly, these errors are not tricks. These errors are actual random happening. And because it's actual random, it cannot take you in a bad direction. You cannot say, oh, I've been modified this way by some evil entity that tried to make me in a certain way. No, they go at random. And most of the time, because it's random, it's not going to matter. So DNA is in a good standing. This explains why DNA doesn't go in a preferred direction. It's randomness first and then selection. You establish a random baseline of mutations. Those mutations get selected, and the selection brings you in a non-random direction. But the initial engine is random. Memes are not in that same situation. Memes do not have random at base before selection. In fact, before a meme gets transmitted, it's already being reshaped, being mutated. So for example, if I say a couple of things to you, point 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And let's say that point 5 is very taboo. And let's say that point 3 is a secret and I want you to keep it. And let's say point 1 is a reality that I'm stating but that you really don't like. What do you think is going to happen to when you transmit that meme? You're going to transmit point 2 and 4. You're going to say, oh, you know, point 1, I don't believe you're right. I'm going to hide it. I'm not going to tell my children that. Point 5 is way too taboo. I'm not going to talk about it. And point 3, I don't like it. I'm not going to talk about it. So you have a filtering process that is much different than selection. Because you've acquired information when you record an ID. And you can modify and play and jungle with that information all you want. In fact, you can say the contrary. I can tell you the sky is blue. You can go out there and say, no, no, the sky is pink. You have infinite mutational power onto memes. And that means that memes are not self-preserving the way DNA is. It means that memes, if you want to see them as a life form, you're going to have to accept that it's a highly mutational life form. The same way if we had a squirrel in a lab and we were constantly zapping his DNA to shape it into some kind of, some dolphin. Let's say you keep affecting squirrel DNA every generation to transform them into dolphins. You domesticate them genetically by zapping their DNA to transfer them into dolphins. You wouldn't say that the squirrel is evolving in a Darwinian way. You would acknowledge that the squirrel is getting engineered. Well, memes are getting engineered. And because they're getting engineered, they're not subject to a true form of the random-based Darwinian evolution. That's the point of the revolutionary phenotype. Now, the realization is, now that we have those rules, these three rules, can it happen that these three rules are violated at the same time by some event that the life form doesn't fully control? And the answer is yes, and it happened 4 billion years ago. So when you have a new genetic code that shows, and that genetic code starts being used as a hard drive that the life form is storing inside, when RNA started producing molecules of DNA and started saying, you know what? That's a more solid backbone for my descent. I will now produce my RNA babies from this DNA strand. So when you have this, you have a phenotypic revolution. Why? Because the novel DNA strand that showed up 4 billion years ago, that was in an environment filled with RNA life forms, it had already solved the three problems of the phenotype that I listed. It wasn't forgetful because it was getting recorded by the RNA life form. It wasn't a naked warrior because it was living by an already existing life form. And it wasn't victim of a trickster printer because the RNA life form was insisting on keeping those DNA strands around because they were accurate. In fact, precisely, the accuracy of the DNA strand was the reason why it evolved, the reason why it was better than RNA. So because you had a solution to the three problems, DNA was allowed to take over the former life form. And because DNA had solved these three problems, it eventually outcompeted RNA. And there became a point where the life forms decided, evolutionarily, by selection, RNA isn't a good storage media anymore. We're going to spend less time in RNA. And perhaps at first it was 50-50. DNA transfer, RNA transfer. DNA, that's what I call the replicator tango. There was a time at which there was intermission between the two replicator. But eventually, just straight out copying DNA became a better option for preserving the genes than straight out copying RNA and then making DNA storage temporary. So eventually, maybe it was at 50-50, eventually 60-40, eventually 90-10. Eventually, you spend all of your time in DNA. And eventually, what's left of the DNA self-replicating molecules? Well, eventually they look like a virus to you because it's like they keep replicating, they keep wanting to survive, but we've already resolved everything. We've already imported all of the genes into DNA. We've already resolved the three problems of the phenotype. We've already delegated everything that was to be delegated. So what's left of the RNA life form, because it never wants to die. Even if it's stuck in a revolutionary phenotype, there's still a bubbling of life in there. It still wants to live, and it still has natural selection pressure that leads it to want to live. The same way, there's still natural selection pressure that makes mitochondria in our cells wanting to live and being selected for living in our cells. Well, what happens to the RNA life form? It becomes a virus. Because progressively, the DNA life form is building an immune system. It's fighting back. It's saying, hey, I got all the genes now. Anything you can do is just more disruption. So here, I'm going to develop a gene that kicks out RNA, self-replicating RNA, bans it from the cell using all sorts of chemical attacks. But RNA still wants to live. So what does it become? Well, it becomes a virus. It becomes a traveling virus that is constantly rejected by cells, but that can only aspire to reintegrate the DNA genome by becoming a reverse transcriptase virus. So that's why we have, in modern times, the RNA life form has been preserved in the form of a virus. Not because it's always been a virus. It was the original being from which we come. But it faced the problem that the things that it created was bigger than itself. And it trusted a genomic layer that was higher than itself, that was capable of more. Therefore, the RNA life form has been delegating existence to another entity, and as a result, its only survivors are the small RNA viruses. Those viruses that are either RNA replicating or they are reverse transcriptase virus. They can only output themselves in a DNA strand and then come back to RNA. All of these types of viruses that we know in modern times are an illustration of the fight that happened 4 billion years ago. I'm absolutely certain of that. And because of these discoveries of the last 6 years, 2020 to 2026, We can now say that the theory of phenotypic revolution informs us on things that we didn't know. That it has made a specific written prediction in my book available to everyone to review in 2018. And Amazon doesn't lie about publication dates. It was published in 2018 and it was there. That there was once a reading of a protein that led to DNA. And now, thanks to this article and the two others I've presented, we know that it's true. We know that these thoughts that I had in 2018 have led to the correct hypothesis, the correct prediction. I was right. And it's about time that academia accepts this, stops giving bullshit excuses for not engaging with my book. I have the theory to prove how genetic layers emerge, why they exist, and why they're the way they are. And for the next 100 years, it's going to be JF was right. For the next 100 years of biology research, you guys are going to explore 100 different times, 100 different things, but it will always be the thing that I predicted that was true. Because I'm on a mission to prove that you guys aren't listening properly. To prove that the academia is not attentive to the truth enough. To prove that I can give the truth on a silver platter to this society. But instead of paying attention to it, and the great danger that this truth reveals, because this truth reveals also that we're about to give to AI the powers that were given to DNA. We're about to delegate the way the RNA life forms delegated. And humanity is about to die because it doesn't want to listen to me. And instead of listening to me, what does it do? Produces all these hit pieces and JF is evil and oh, his ex is saying this and oh, maybe he killed his wife. All of this to avoid the discussion that must happen, which is we are currently in great danger. We are committing to the route of a phenotypic revolution. AI has been making strides since I predicted that it would be making stride, exactly in the direction I predicted. AI is about to modify humans genetically. It's doing it. Sam Altman is currently working on developing an AI that will counsel parents genetically to tell them change this gene and that gene. And you guys are all involved in, yes, DK Shadow, pathetic gay ops. Trying to cancel an intellectual who's asked for nothing else but to be heard about this danger that we're exposed to right now. So get it going. Start reading. This book is $9 for fuck's sake. John Drake says, I read the book in 2019. I will testify it was out. Hey. Exactly. See, I already have my witness in the court of judgment for civilization. Photoman says, JF, do you have an idea of how autism is originated in a majority young male population? I believe it is an overexpression of genes that occur naturally. Thoughts of your own? Yeah, I believe it's the expression of genes that happen naturally, yes. But I believe it's not even correct to say overexpression. Because I believe that autism in its strongest expression is just the right amount of autism.